so that gives me a little bit of an edge, some authority about what I'm going to speak about today. I'm old, and also have been practicing as a nurse for over 50 years. And I like to think I've learned a thing or two about aging from the very young and from the very old. Some of it is good, some not so good. All of it, though, rich. 10 years ago, I was in Japan, and I got this lovely little notebook, and I wanted to bring it to show it to you. This, as you can see, is not very colorful. It's thin, it's 7x10 on like our 8x10s, and it costs 90 yen, which translates roughly into 75 cents. Barring inflation, of course, that was about maybe 92. This little book has carried me, I think, through many, many days when I needed inspiration. What it says on the cover, well, I'll talk about the pages first. Every page is stamped with these words, and what they are is especially good conditioners. The Japanese have a wonderful way with the language, with the English language, the translation from Japanese to English in particular, especially good conditioners. Under that, the subtitle is, if you want to get happy, you have to do everything with bravery. And then, you'll find you have already got happy. So I thought that would be a good place to start on this glorious Sunday morning. Talking about aging actually makes death meaningful. And I just want to let that sit for a minute. We fool ourselves if we think that holding back aging is going to hold back death. Actually, to resist aging is to resist living, if you think about it. And you've thought much of this before. I doubt I'm going to bring you anything earth-shattering or lightning-striking, other than maybe some of the new neuroscience, which is extremely encouraging and exciting. However, we can't live outside of time. There's two quick ways to grow old. Quick ways to grow old. Bit of an oxymoron, since the process we hope and even pray will be slow. The first one is to resist it obstinately, stubbornly, and all of those other synonyms that have to do with resisting change. The other is to worship it abjectly. Two ways to grow old. I'd like to suggest another way to do that as we proceed here this morning. In the first case, if we're resisting it, we're kind of like twigs. Think of a stream, especially now in the Otter Creek as it's rushing. I noticed this and had this thought as I was walking in the golf course a couple mornings ago, slogging through what then was a light snow. We all saw that, and did we believe it? No. There I was, and I saw this muddy stream just rushing past these twigs, and things would snag on the twigs. You know that look? So if we are going to resist change, I was reminded that it's kind of like those twigs in the creek. We'll get worn down and we'll get bleached by this process. By the flow of experience, we can get worn down. The second way to worship it, we can become also worn down, weary even, by innumerable reorchestrations to circumstance. One comes to mind, and speaking of reorchestrations, plastic surgery, liposuction, moving, geographic cures, moving to some warm place where the temperature never goes below your age. Or a waist to reorchestrate. Or we can take the high road. Taking the high road means that we have to understand the balance. Balance is key. The balance of dynamics of aging. And then to retain the ability to convert change into growth. Everything that I know and have learned about aging is about converting change into growth. When we ask most people, what do you think about change? If they answer spontaneously, they don't like it much. We resist change. We resist it with all every fiber, with all our being. Certain kinds of change, at least. One doesn't like to make general statements about such things. However, I think it's fair to say, wouldn't you agree, that at minimum we resist change? So, taking the high road, what does that mean? To me it means remaining fresh, remaining alive. I believe we can actually float in time. We need to understand balance in order to do that. And can we use our time better? Absolutely. You all realize this is not a rehearsal. One-way trip. And can we use our time better? Absolutely. And I'm here to give you a few ideas that you may espouse about how to do that. I want to talk about the power of mindset primarily. Everyone talks about mindset a lot. And have you noticed the culture is focused all of a sudden now on aging? Being a bit of a cynic, I think that has to do somewhat with the dollar, the one with silver, spent by those of us who have silver hair or hair that was silver yesterday or whatever, the silver dollar. I don't want to get into a talk about social economics, but we see it, don't we? A huge investment in things now to attract the dollars of the silver foxes and whatever the female corollary is in foxy, I don't know. The silver people with the money. That's a part of it, and I'll let that go because that can really get me off on a tangent. Why do our bodies grow old, and what can we do about it? Why they grow old, of course, has to do with the science of biology. The biology of aging is extremely, extremely powerful and interesting. Many people who are concerned with the biology of aging are looking to increase, to prolong the lifespan. You probably all received in your mailbox pamphlets about take this pill and you will live forever, or eat green seaweed or something like that. The fact is there's no evidence, no scientific evidence to support that any of it works. So spend your silver dollars on something else. Also, what can we talk about in terms of the biology of aging? I like to think about it, as I said a moment ago, in stretching the health span rather than the lifespan. The lifespan is not predictable, is it? The health span, however, is within our control to do something with that. We can take that and we can become more plastic, not just in our brain, but in our body. So how can we grow towards time? How can we grow into the future and stretch, not just the body? Perhaps more important is stretching the mind. And there is solid evidence that I could quote you all kinds of studies. And if anyone's interested, I can get a bibliography if you want to read them. I encourage you to read them, though, on paper. One of the issues we have with the internet, and I'm sure you're aware of it, and Googling everything, it's called cognitive overload. Have you heard that term? You can get so much stuff coming at the part of the brain that deals with short-term memory that the cells become overloaded, and instead of informing us and growing us, they in fact cause us damage to the cells. Just a thought for somebody and those internet users. We all are. It's here to stay, isn't it? So we must embrace it, sort of. So I want to talk about how can we make the old new? How can we make the new newer? Complex thought. How can we begin again and again and again? How can we become again and again and again new and stretch ourselves into the future? three things have been happening, or have happened, I should say, in my life in the last couple of days. As I thought about aging and speaking this morning, and I thought, what can I say in 20 minutes about aging? Because it takes so long, we hope. We hope it takes a very long time, don't we, for us to age. And what can I say in 20 minutes? And then I thought about these three things that have happened to me since Friday. A compelling short space of time. But in the bigger picture, in the rehearsal sense, a long time. On Friday, I ended up in the emergency department with a friend of mine who was 91 years old, a friend, and she's a client. I have a little consulting thing going on about falling prevention and so on. I ended up with her in the emergency room, and she had a fall during the night and found herself there, 91 years of age. As the numbers of tubes that they inserted into her body multiplied, the doctor suggested to her only next of kin who was available locally, a cousin, the doctor suggested to him at the bedside of my friend, within hearing, within, what do you call it, earshot, he said, in a fairly strong, loud voice, "You need to think about how old she is before we put this tube in." I thought, I was standing there and I had to, you know, be quiet because it was not my place to speak. I thought, what does that mean? What does that mean? How old is she? How old is she? And I played this around in my head a little bit, having been in these situations many times as a nurse. And this was a little different because I was standing on the edge of this. But it was a dramatic moment. I was on the edge. You know, on the face of it, his explanation sounds reasonable, doesn't it? However, what was missing, the fact of the matter is, this 91-year-old person, the very day before, played a mean 6-game set of tennis. Drove it down the line more times than I can say, and won. This 91-year-old woman did the day before what she does every week. Cognitively, this woman is, as we say, in the ages and jargon, she is, we say this about old people, sharp as a tack. She lives independently, she drives a Volvo, she's fully functional. She's a woman of a great deal of resilience and grace. She's not an old category. She's not a demographic that we put in the old section now. You know, we've gone now to four demographics of aging, and the 70 to 80 some would be old. She's not a demographic. She's not the number 91, soon to be 92. She's not the number. She's not a number. He said, "You need to think about how old she is before we put this tube in," within her earshot. That was the first thing that happened. The second thing, since Friday, I was paging through a bunch of old New York Times newspapers. I get one every Sunday, and I'm lucky if I finish it before the next Sunday comes, but I relish that for $6, eh? Got a paper to read every day. Not a bad deal. I was paging through it. I'm going to read this verbatim to you, lest you think that I'm the one who's bonkers. A team of researchers based at Yale School of Public Health examined a large sample of Facebook groups created by 20 to 29-year-olds. The researchers learned that three quarters of the groups were found to denigrate old people. more than one-third, one-third, advocated banning old people from public activities like shopping. This from the New York Times. Shopping. Somebody's missing the game there, aren't they? Where are the Retail Association of America when we need them? The third thing happened to me when I was on my way up to Fletcher Allen, which is now known as the Vermont UVM Medical Center, to visit this 91-year-old, tubes and all. I heard this on NPR from the Korea Herald. South Korea's, and I quote, South Korea's elderly poverty rate, you may have heard this, stunning. South Korea's elderly poverty rate was close to 50% in 2013, which was 3.5 times higher than the national average, a report showed on Wednesday. And this from the British, The Guardian. There is a dark side to South Korea's 50-year rise to riches. The graying generation that is most responsible for that ascent is living in relative poverty. In a fast-paced nation, famous for its high achievers and its big spending on private tutors and luxury goods, half of South Korea's elderly are poor, the highest rate in the industrialized world. Some live in crumbling hillside neighborhoods that lack running water. Others wait in line at soup kitchens where there is no young face in sight. The worst off comb through garbage, collecting cardboard and paper, and lugging it to rubbish dumps where they receive a dollar or two or a pile. It's common in central Seoul to see elderly people gathering scraps. End quote. You know, when we talk about something that affects us personally, can you feel the air change? The charge changes in the air. We become much more acutely aware when we talk about something that personally affects us. Those events, those three events that I spoke of, started me thinking about ageism, and in particular, about the language used to describe the demographic tons of old people, just piling up. Those are my words, piling up. I like that image. We're piling up, aren't we, as all folks? Hopefully in a good way. The ageism language, anyway, is nothing short of apocalyptic when you think about it. Words like age quake, demographic time bomb, gerontophobia. Remember the old phrase, the brain of America?
Yes.
Remember that one? These new terms, this new ageism language, sounds like a Victorian garden party, doesn't it, by comparison? Gerontophobia. Geriatric didn't always have a pejorative tone to it. Gerontophobia? Okay. So, the truth is, aging's harder than death. We can internalize these messages about this long, slow decline, or we can change our own process of aging. We can manage our own aging. Yes, there are comorbidities, there are diseases over which we have not much control. However, I posit the notion that we have more control over them than we want to believe or that we want to exercise. Choice is the greatest of human freedoms, is it not? We can choose to be free and not able, or we can choose to be able and not free. Powerful. I believe we should choose to be free and able. We can choose to be vigorous, we can choose to be vital, and shorten this inevitable, as it's called, functional decline. Our age number, mine is 74, by the way, can become our defining characteristic, or the wonder that makes each one of us unique, the wonder that makes us who we are. We can choose that as our defining characteristic. Aging, then, is, I believe, about the power of mindset. It's about health span instead of lifespan. How do we stretch forward then into time? How do we find new beginnings as we grow old? How do we increase this health span? Philosophically speaking, to learn is a verb that has no legitimate past tense, in my view. There's always more to learn. We hear the phrase often in academia about lifelong learning. That is made up that way for a reason. There's always more to learn as long as we're alive. That sounds like a cliche. It's not. When you die, it's a good thing to be alive when you die, isn't it? Yeah. When you're alive, I believe, through learning. I really do believe that. What we've learned in the past can become new because we're different. We've changed. What we learned when we were young, it's not done, is it? It's not past tense. We dredge it up and make it new. Every day we do that. We are new and we are old. Think about high school. Dreadful thought, right? Or not. High school, freshman. Fresh. Good. Starting. Sophomore. Junior, arriving. Senior, the end. Yes? The end of high school is senior. Now, do you remember when we decided as a nation to become seniors at age 50 or 55? I've forgotten which one because I don't want to remember that. And we were excited. We could get half-price tickets to the movies. We could do a lot of different things. And then, somewhere in the 30s, 65 became the age limit for Medicare, and therefore, retirement. When you look at that word, I like words. Words, to me, are very powerful, to retire. Doesn't turn me on. Let's put it that way. I just dropped the pen in the water, Jennifer, didn't it? Anyway. Those things happen when you get freaked out about a child. Start dropping pens in your cup of water. Anyway, so dynamic aging is what I think we need to be thinking about. We need to be balancing. We need to be changing. Turning change into growth. So how do we do it? We have to adapt. Our bodies, our minds, the world around us, it's changing, isn't it, at a pace that is stunning. You go to sleep at night, you wake up in the morning and something's grown on you that you just don't know how that happened overnight. Of course it didn't, but you're just noticing it. You wake up and the Google Watch is on the front page of the paper. It's going on and on and on, and so there's nothing to do about that, is there? There's nothing to do but go with it and use it. Use it to advantage. Use it to our own advantage. It's challenging, yes. But hey, did anybody say getting old was going to be easy? I don't think so. Think about aging, if you will, as a developmental stage. If you've studied in school any of those ages of development, you very rarely see anything that refers to aging as an actual developmental stage. And it is, clearly it is. How to change and evolve, that's the age that we're all in. Your memory starts to change as early as the 30s. For the young folks in the room, at age 30, through the evidence that is provided by functional MRI, magnetic resonance imaging, we know that the portions of the brain that manage memory start to change as early as the 30s. And so this is not a topic, is it, for the very old or for old people even? Because for the youth in the room, for you to deny aging is really to deny who you will become, isn't it? And so, although that's a sobering thought, it's never too early to get started with thinking about these things. The question really is, in a sense, the question is to be or not to be, and not in the Shakespearean suicidal context, if you agree with that concept of it. It is rather to be open to the gift of time, to be emerging and trying to find a way to accept yourself. How do we find these new beginnings? There are four principles that drive the notion of dynamic aging: learning, interaction, flexibility, and energy. Maximizing learning. I need to shorten up, don't I, Jim? Yes, I do. So I'm going to start really going then. Maximizing learning is a way to look at all of the things you know. I'll just leave this with this one sentence. All of the things that we know are generally based on deeply conditioned concepts, thoughts, and understandings that we have had earlier on. They are based on conditioned behavior. They're based, a lot of them, on what other people thought we should do, what other people said we should do, what other people told us to do. The kind of learning I'm talking about is looking through a new lens, not learning that's based on the conditioning. And that requires you to challenge yourself when you say you know something and that you're basing a decision on it. You just want to check, is this something that is my learning? Have I taken this and made it new? Or am I directing my life based on information that is conditioned past? And we can make choices then, can't we? In service of ourselves. We can make choices in service of ourselves. That is one of the splendid things that you arrive at as you get older. And that's a good thing to do. Maximizing interaction. We can never get back the time we spend texting. We want to expand ourselves, stretch into time by connections. And one of the things that is startlingly wonderful about your community in this church, and I'm reminded of it again this morning, is your ability to connect with one another. You can feel it in this room. It's palpable when you come in here. It's actually palpable. And that's a tremendous accomplishment, and I applaud you. And I'm jealous. Don't strike me down. So we can make choices with the interaction. We can find out from ourselves what is our edge. Where can we operate so that we're a little bit away from what we've always done. We're in a new place, a new zone, with healthy stress levels, of course. Somebody said, a researcher, someone of note at a conference I was at in New York not too long ago, that he believes that brain plasticity is made better if you put yourself in a situation at least once every 30 days, it makes you uncomfortable. I thought that was very compelling. Maximize flexibility is the third way that you can understand what drives the notion of dynamic aging. Every day, you need to do some exercise. And by that, I mean intentional, thoughtful exercise. Putting your joints to a range of motion. Stand on one leg, stand on the other leg. Park your car as far away from Christ Chapel as you can. And use those minutes you have to walk to the front door, looking around you, looking at the people, license plates, whatever you see that catches your eye. Use that time. Mental rigidity, probably almost close second, if not the first, to skeletal and muscular rigidity. We have to keep the mind operating. Build up your cognitive reserve. As we get older, we need an energy reserve and we need a cognitive reserve so that we can tap into it. Make a plan for aging. Do you have a plan for aging? many of us have a plan for retirement. Do we have a plan for aging? I think that's a pretty good question. Start to do things that create self-awareness. Sudoku and crosswords are a great fun thing to do. And over time, when you get good at them, the brain knows that. And I'm not suggesting you give any of those activities up. What I'm saying is add new things. The brain needs new things to keep the plasticity of the cell level. I'm skipping some things, so maybe I'll invite you back. Maximizing energy as you age, your energy levels need to be managed. We hear the phrase a lot, don't you? You gotta slow down. You really need to think about slowing down. At your age, you need to slow down. Do we hear those messages? Sure, we hear them all the time. I would say don't slow down. Speed up. Speed up safely. Push the limits. Push yourself a little bit. And if you're not doing things, don't expect to have any energy. Energy is created at the cell level by demand. Demand, demand. If you're not demanding energy at the cell level, you're going to feel tired. Pure and simple. Simple science. Input. We need input all the time. New input from people. That's what I loved coming in here this morning. Input is person to person, isn't it? In here. That's what makes it lift up. It makes the energy palpable in here. It's person to person. I didn't see anybody texting anybody else in here this morning. You might have been texting people outside, I didn't notice. But I've actually been in a car in California with a co-worker and her teenage daughter and her teenage daughter's friend in the back seat of the same car. And they're texting each other. You know, it's all about input. It's about what you eat. You've all heard about the polyphenols and the flavonoids and the flavanols and etc., the antioxidant food. It's all about what you take in. We can generate, though, our own energy by paying attention to self-motivation. We can generate our own energy by emerging rather than declining. It's a mindset. There are a million ways to do practical things, which we don't have time to detail them today. What I wanted to say was about mindset, change mindset, and wonderful things can happen. Elimination is the fourth one. And don't worry, I'm not going to start talking about bowels. Elimination, in reference to downsizing, taking things out of your life that are not potent, that are not a priority, pursuits, people even. As harsh as that may sound, if we have people who drain energy from us, I call them dream snatchers instead of catchers, we need to maybe move on getting that changed. So, aging then is developmental. And I would like to add, if you can indulge me for just two more minutes, can I do that? With a poem. And then I hope we'll have a few minutes. This is a poem written by a man, a centenarian, you may know him, Stanley Kunitz. He's dead. He died on May 14, 2006 at 101. He lived a long, vital life, vital being the key word. A gardener, no surprise there. He was U.S. Poet Laureate twice, and he won every prize you could come up with, starting with the Pulitzer and ending with the Robert Frost Prize for Poetry. This is his poem. If you would indulge me and close your eyes. Thank you. Lights flashed this morning over the shell pink anemones swaying on their tall stems. Down blue spiked erotagus, light glowed in rivulets over the humps of the honeybees. This morning, I saw light kiss the silk of the roses in their second flowering. My late bloomers flushed with their brandy. A curious gladness shook me. I can scarcely wait until tomorrow, when a new life begins for me, as it does each day, as it does each day. Thank you.
You'll take just 5 minutes for a slide.